Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren has rolled out policy proposal after policy proposal in her presidential campaign, which was the heart of comedian Kate McKinnon's parody of Warren on the latest Saturday Night Live.
You know, I'm setting myself apart from the other candidates by saying what I'm going to do and how I'm going to do it. Whoa, what a crackpot idea.
One of those ideas is to make public college free and to forgive $640 billion of student debt. Tomorrow on Radio Boston, we'll hear from people on both sides of Warren's free college and debt forgiveness plans. But today we'll dig into how the two pieces of that plan will work and what they would look like in Massachusetts. And let's start by breaking down free public college with Jeremy Thompson. He's a senior policy analyst at the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center. Hey there, Jeremy.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So can we start with just a couple of basics? Like, what do we have right now? How is public college funded in Massachusetts at the present?
Sure. So for the most part, all public colleges and universities get funding from the state budget. UMass Amherst has a sizable endowment, similar to what a private college might have. But for the most part, the other UMass campuses, state universities, and community colleges are dependent for tuition and fees for the rest of their revenue that doesn't come from the state.
And what's your understanding of how Warren's plan would change that?
So my understanding of Warren's plan is that it essentially would make all public colleges in the country tuition free. And in the case of Massachusetts, that would mean tuition and fee free, which means that students would no longer have to pay anything to attend these colleges. The state would still need to continue funding them to pay for the teachers, to pay for services. And arguably, state funding would have to increase if more people came in the door as the price went down.
And Warren says she would levy an extra 2% tax on households that have a net worth of $50 million or more. And she says that this plan to tax the wealthiest families in America would bring about $2.75 trillion over 10 years. Here she is on CNN recently.
If we put that 2-cent wealth tax in place on the 75,000 largest fortunes in this country, 2 cents, we can do universal child care for every baby 0 to 5, universal pre-K, universal college, and knock back the student loan debt burden for 95% of our students and still have nearly $1 trillion left over.
All right. There's a lot of numbers in there, Jeremy. So help us do the math. I mentioned earlier that Warren is proposing $640 billion of debt forgiveness. She says if you combine the cost of that with free public college, you'd get to $1.25 trillion over a decade. Mm-hmm. So she's saying there'll be $1.5 trillion left over for other programs. Is that realistic?
Well, the math works. I mean, I don't think there's any question that the wealth is there in the country to be taxed. We do see increasing concerns over inequality, and we do see increasing support for taxing wealth and redistributing it. So in terms of the political realities, obviously, if she wins in 2020, she'll have to have Congress with her to get anything passed. We know that's been difficult in Washington, but mathematically, it seems to work, yeah.
You know, this idea isn't entirely brand new. Bernie Sanders campaigned in 2016 on the idea of a free public college program. So is there something distinctive in your mind about Warren's plan, the way she's rolled it out in this election cycle?
Well, I haven't done an in-depth comparison between Warren's plan and other plans. But one thing that is really key to Warren's plan, and especially the way she's talking about it, is the word universal, right? She used that word, I think, 2 or 3 times in the quote that you gave. And what's important about that is that it mirrors the way we treat K-12 education, right? So in Massachusetts, almost 200 years ago, Horace Mann, then the secretary of the Board of Education, decided we need elementary and high school education to be free, public, universal, right, controlled by the public and accessible to the public. We've sort of moved the ball down the field as far as higher education goes being universal, but we're not there yet. And that's really her goal. And what that's based on is the idea that a high school education used to be enough to get a good job. Now you need at least 14 or 16 years, in other words, a community college degree or a bachelor's degree. But the point is, it's become a basic requirement in this economy to have a college education. And she's saying if it's a basic requirement, it should be a basic right.
What's the outlook for just the mechanics of implementing an idea like this? Because we're talking about a national program here for free public college, but public college systems are typically run by the states. And we've seen this before with Obamacare, for example, you know, a national program, but implemented by states rolling out expanded Medicare, for example. There have been some states with Republican governors that pushed back against that. I mean, how would you envision a program like this rolling out state by state?
Yeah, I think that you probably are going to run into a lot of the same challenges. I mean, we haven't seen the kind of detailed design from Warren. I know that when Hillary Clinton brought this up in 2016, it did involve kind of incentives for states to participate, similar to what Obamacare did. Hers will have to operate similarly because, as you pointed out, states are the ones that run these institutions.
So could Massachusetts afford it? I mean, the out-of-state tuition to go to UMass is pretty pricey. And, of course, there's also the room and board that comes into play. I mean, if Massachusetts had to move to completely free tuition and fees, could we swing it?
You're asking if Massachusetts could afford to do it without the Warren plan or under the Warren plan?
Well, under the Warren plan, I guess, would be the most relevant, yeah.
Well, I think that most of the funding for this is going to come from the federal government. I mean, she's called for states to have some skin in the game. A state like Massachusetts would have to pony up. You know, I think that our experience with so-called universal health care is telling in that we were there before most other states were. So we've shown a willingness to partner with the federal government when plans like this are offered. But I think I think Massachusetts could afford it.
What do you think the impact could be on private colleges? We got a lot of those in Massachusetts, that's for sure. So if a student can go to a public university for free, do you think that would have a trickle-over effect on private universities or perhaps not so much? I'm mindful that we have a John and Abigail Adams scholarship program, for example, in Massachusetts already, and a lot of students who qualify for that maybe still choose to go to private institutions. What do you make of that?
Right. So that's an important point, is that nothing in the Warren plan or even in state-level free college plans call for an abolition of state scholarship money going to private schools. And there's tens of millions of dollars that do that now. You know, the other thing I'll say is that right now we don't have free college, and private colleges are already more expensive than publics, and people still choose to go to private colleges. So there's something more than just price kind of factoring in to students and families' cost-benefit analysis. As for what happens to private colleges, if public college is truly free, I guess I would say that I hope that private colleges that are charging $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year in tuition have a meaningful value proposition to offer besides simply saying, well, we're not a state university, so come here.
So as you know, critics of this plan have argued that it's not as progressive as Warren claims. And I'll quote Sandy Baum from the Urban Institute and UVA professor Sarah Turner, who wrote this in the Washington Post recently, that, quote, an estimated 38% of the benefits of a straightforward national free tuition program for full-time students would flow to those families with incomes above $120,000. The argument there, Jeremy, of course, being that you're sort of implementing new rules onto an old system where students from more affluent families perhaps were the ones who took on a lot of this debt because they thought that they could pay for it or that mom and dad could help out, and they would be the principal beneficiaries of this loan forgiveness program. Do you share those concerns about equity?
Well, I guess there's two ways to look at it. One is that if you really do want college to mirror K-12 and being free, universal, and public, you have to start somewhere. And we it's been a long time since we said to anybody, you can't come to a K-12 college because you make too much – sorry, a K-12 school because you make too much money, right? We just made that universal for everybody, and that has really had the effect of having us feel like we're all in it together. Of course, wealthy families can still, if they want, peel off and go pay for a private elementary high school, and they do. But the universal access and the universal funding of it has made it a kind of all-in program. I think the other thing I would say about the generational equity question is that, you know, I don't think the answer to having a history of bad policy is to kind of further that bad policy. I mean, you have to start somewhere. I feel for the people who say, I had to pay for it, I had to borrow. You know, why shouldn't the next generation have to borrow? But I don't think that you can say two wrongs make a right in this case.
That's Jeremy Thompson. He's a senior policy analyst at the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center. Thanks for your time, Jeremy.
Thanks for having me.
All right, now we want to tackle the second big plank in Elizabeth Warren's college education plan, and that is the student debt forgiveness plan. So to help us break that down is Adam Minsky. He's an attorney based in Boston whose practice specializes in student loan law. Hello, Adam.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I know your firm works exclusively with student borrowers and their families. Can you paint us a picture of the scope of the problem for these student loan borrowers, especially right here in Massachusetts? I mean, how much are we talking about here? Warren is saying $640 billion across the country. What's our share?
So I don't know the exact numbers here in Massachusetts, but what I can tell you is that there's $1.5 trillion in outstanding student debt right now. And to put this in perspective, when I started doing this work a little less than a decade ago, we were at around $700 or $800 billion in student debt. So in less than 10 years, we basically have doubled the amount of student debt that's out there. Of that $1.5 trillion, about $1.1, $1.2 trillion is federal debt. And then we have several hundred billion dollars in private debt as well. And the average amount of debt that that graduates are carrying has gone up faster than the rate of inflation every year. It's started off in the low 30s about 10 years ago and is now upwards of $40,000 per borrower. So it's rapidly growing. It's now the second largest debt out there that people carry aside from mortgages.
So it's a lot of money. Obviously, it sounds like it's crushing.
Yeah.
But what options do people already have if they're struggling to pay their student loans?
Well, it's a great question. You know, the federal government, I think, has tried to create programs that can make it easier for borrowers to repay their loans. And I think inadvertently, they've created a system that's such a mess that a lot of folks are struggling with how to navigate that system. We now have somewhere around a dozen different repayment plan options. We have four or five income-driven plan options. We have multiple loan forgiveness programs. Some are based on your profession. Some are based on the payment plan that you're on. It can be just a complete minefield for folks to navigate, and it really can make getting relief under these programs, you know, very difficult or even impossible.
Even if you're eligible, in other words, it can be
even
hard,
if you're eligible.
It can be hard to find. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So let's just dive into the particulars a little bit. So what Warren is proposing here is a forgiveness of up to $50,000 of debt if you're in a household that makes $250,000 or less, and there's kind of a sliding scale that goes up to that. So I guess what I'm wondering is, does that cap make sense to you? Because the particulars matter here, right? So has the framework she's laid out sound about right approach to you?
I think so. I mean, you know, again, the average amount of student debt that an average borrower is carrying is just under $40,000. And her proposal would forgive up to $50,000 for borrowers who make up to $100,000 a year. And then it phases out between $100,000 per year and $250,000 per year. And I think the idea is for folks who are making more than $250,000 per year, you know, you don't really need that type of loan forgiveness benefit. You can afford to pay back your loans under a regular standard plan.
And she says that about three quarters of borrowers would have their student loans wiped out completely by this, that they would be totally cleared off the books, which the argument is that would be a big jump start for the economy. They could go out and maybe buy houses that this generation has not been buying.
That's correct. I mean, I know from personal experience, I mean, I speak to dozens of student loan borrowers every week, you know, to be perfectly honest, and so many of them are struggling with affording basic things. You know, many of them are living at home. They can't get approval for a car loan or for a rental application. Certainly buying a house seems forever out of reach. I do think this would jumpstart the overall economy and get folks to, you know, spend money on things that they feel like they can't afford to spend money on right now.
So as I mentioned earlier, Warren is proposing to pay for this with what she's calling an ultra-millionaire's tax. That's an extra 2% tax on about 75,000 households, she says, that have net worths of $50 million or more. Does that math add up to you?
It seems to. I mean, I haven't actually, you know, crunched the numbers, but I'm a law guy, not a math guy. But, you know, what I can say is that, you know, for 75,000 families to pay a tax that would benefit over 30 million families who are carrying and struggling with their student debt, you know, to me, that doesn't seem to be unfair.
You know, Jeremy Thompson and I, we were just talking about the equity issue, and there's been some criticism of this as well on the student debt issue. So, for example, the Brookings Institution says that two-thirds of the savings of this debt forgiveness program would go to the top 40% of households, and that the bottom 20% of households would collect just 4% of the benefits. So it's some of the same issues that we were talking about in the college free college tuition plan, right, where the people who were willing to take on the debt were the ones perhaps who came from more affluent backgrounds anyway. So what do we make of who benefits under this plan? Is it as progressive as the senator is billing it?
Well, again, 75% of borrowers are going to get massive amounts of relief here. I think, you know, that has to be the focus. And as Jeremy said, we have to start somewhere. I think that all the proposals that we've seen thus far with regard to the student debt crisis have at best just nibbled around the edges. I think if we really want to tackle this problem, we need something drastic. And this program, this proposal would benefit millions and millions of student loan borrowers. And I think we have to look at the bigger picture on that.
You mentioned that most of the outstanding student debt is owed to the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
But there is some in the private market as well. So under Warren's plan, what do we know about how that would work?
So Warren's campaign actually contacted me to confirm that her proposal would would be for both federal loans and private loans as well. Now, what we don't know is exactly how that would be allocated. Would student loan borrowers have the choice? Could they say, I want this benefit that I qualify for to go only to my private loans or only to my federal loans? But her campaign did confirm that both private and federal student loans would be eligible for the loan forgiveness.
And what questions do you have left? I mean, are you looking for more details to be filled in, or do you feel like you've got a pretty good grasp?
For me, it's all about the implementation of this. The road to student loan hell is paved with the best of intentions. I think that a lot of programs have been created with the intent to benefit borrowers, and they have just been a complete mess because of the implementation. So I really want to know how this is going to work and how people are going to get this benefit, because if it's not done properly, even if it's a great idea, it could be a disaster.
I think a lot of people with heavy debt burdens want to know the answers to those questions
indeed,
too.
Indeed.
That's Adam Minsky. He's an attorney based in Boston whose practice specializes in student loan law. Thanks, Adam.
Thank you.
I'm Callum Borchers. This is Radio Boston.